It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. And our subject today is the experience of being lesbian, gay, transgender, or bisexual in Anchorage. And it's a big issue for us politically in Anchorage because we've had multiple rounds in our political life where we've talked about equality for people with different sexual identities. But that's not what we're going to really do today. We're not going to be in the position necessarily of debating laws and politics. We're going to be talking more about what is the experience of being differently identified sexually in Anchorage, and how that feels, and what our community is like for the LGBT community that's within it. I'm hoping also to get some dumb questions answered. I know I'm full of questions as somebody who's, I guess, fairly sheltered. And I've had sort of gay friends over my life, but I've never necessarily felt like cornering them and asking them the dumb questions. So I took the opportunity of getting three great guests today who have agreed to answer my dumb questions, and maybe you'll have some too, the things you always wanted to know. And so I'm going to give out the phone numbers where you can get on the air with us in just a minute. But let me introduce my guests. Anne-Marie Moylan is the co-chair of the group called Identity, of the board of directors. It's a nonprofit which has a number of different programs for the LGBT community. Thanks for being with us, Anne-Marie.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Anne-Marie also helped me set up the show today in terms of finding the right people to be on with us. Drew Phoenix is another co-chair of Identity. Thanks for being with us, Drew.
Great to be here.
And Drew Limish is a UAA student. He's a student worker with a program called Safe Zone, and he also happens to be the UAA student government president. Thanks for being with us, Drew.
Hi. Great to be here as well.
And I guess since we've got two Drews, unusual problem, I'll refer to you as Drew Limish and Drew Phoenix. And just to start out, we're talking before the show, as it normally we invite people here because of their jobs or because of like something, their role in the community. And here we've invited you because of your sort of personal identity. And so I thought maybe I'd let you identify yourselves rather than me identify you for you, and you know, talk a little bit about what it is being you. Anne-Marie?
Okay, I will start by saying that I appreciate you giving me that opportunity. If I get a chance to actually tell people about me, I'm a leader in the LGBTQ community. I take advantage of the fact that I'm a mom, and it makes me able to speak to people in a different way. I'm on this show because I believe in supporting our community first and foremost. I'm also a person who lives in a box, according to a lot of other people, and that's the B box. You might consider me bisexual. I really don't enjoy that experience. I'm one that I play in the sandbox with others well, but I'm also a fighter for breaking down the walls for all of those boxes.
Okay, cool. Wow, that's a good self-introduction. Now, you guys have got a high bar now. Drew Phoenix, tell us about yourself and how you identify.
I identify as transgender. I'm a transgender male, which means that at birth, the doctors assigned female sex to me, but I have, since about the age of 3 or 4, identified as a boy and then a man. And so a transgender person is someone who's assigned sex doesn't match their own inner sense of who they are and what their gender is. And just to piggyback on what Anne-Marie said, one of the things I always want to, when given the opportunity like this, to talk about is the fluidity of gender and of sexual orientation, too, because and how new our language is to describe gender identity and sexual orientation. Language is an evolving thing. And so we're sort of in limits these days, and we put boxes out there, L, G, B, T, and sometimes add a couple others. But I would say that those are pretty limiting, and hopefully we'll get into a greater discussion about that today.
Yeah, and I want to let Drew Limish introduce himself too, but this is going to be a big topic today because there's also this issue of a broader community that doesn't think about these issues all the time. And as I was at a political fundraiser last night talking about today's show and talking with an older group of women, and said, we're talking about LGBT, and sort of like, LGBT, what does that stand for? So, you know, there's inside and outside, right? There's sort of this whole issue of identity is how people see you and how they perceive you as well as how you perceive yourself. Drew Lemus, thank you for being with us. A different generation than the rest of the people around the table. How do you identify yourself?
I identify as a gay man. But like the other two, I think the barriers and boxes definitely need to be broken down. And by identifying as gay, like my hope is one day you don't have to identify. Like you see it online all the time. Mm-hmm. People like one day you don't have to come out of the closet. It's just who you are mm-hmm. and not identifying and, you know, not be, you're still gay, but you don't have to, you know, I don't have to tell people that I'm gay.
It's not the first thing on the list, right?
I don't want that to be like an identifying factor and people judge me or look at me differently because of that.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting because you're all talking about that same thing, and yet in fighting for equal rights, you're kind of forced to identify yourself. So
yes.
That it's a double-edged sword, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, actually, we've been invited in. The B's and the T's that I'll refer to us as, we've actually been outliers invited into a community of lesbians and gay people who have wanted to share our struggles with them, and I'm happy to stand up. I'm happy to stand up for equality, and I'm very thrilled to be part of that. It's a large group, and it's bound to get larger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great topic. So many questions, so many interesting things to talk about, and this is your opportunity if you want to join this discussion. I think we're just going to have an hour of open discussion on these topics of gender identity, sexual identity on Hometown Alaska. To get on the air, call 550-8433. That's 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, you can call toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the email here is hometown@alaskapublic.org. hometown@alaskapublic.org. And when we get those messages, we read them on the air and share the questions with listeners. And I don't want to talk about alphabet soup too much, but I know there are letters sort of being added to the four letters LGBT, now Q. And I think a lot of folks who are not part of this community don't know what Q is. Would anybody like to take Q and define it for me? All right. Well, I'll have to pick somebody out. Drew Phoenix, go ahead.
Q is questioning, but it can also mean queer. Mm-hmm. And actually, growing up into young adulthood, I was very accustomed to using the term queer, which is offensive to some people in our community, and they don't like it. But the one thing I like about it is that it's inclusive. There can be all kinds of letters under the queer term. And it allows more fluidity, I think. And some people don't want to be in one of those four boxes that you named earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And so they choose the term queer or maybe even gender queer. Or they're questioning. They don't know. They're exploring what is my gender identity? Who am I attracted to? Who do I love? You know, mm-hmm. and they're exploring. Or refuse to settle in one place and just are more fluid as a person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So... I mean, there's an issue here, though, which is we're now getting in maybe the dumb question area. You know, there's this phrase gaydar, right? I don't know if it came from Seinfeld or where it came from. Is like knowing who's what, mm-hmm. right? And it seems to me like there's a practical issue. Like if you're a guy looking for guys or a woman looking for women, you need to know who else is interested in you. So there is some need to be identified, right? And so how does that... how are we to know who's who?
Well, back in the day, there was a methodology to all that, and it was about colors and hankies and where you put it in mm-hmm. what pocket and where you hung what ear, and that actually that's quite interesting. It delves into the history of the gay movement itself
mm-hmm.
because for young people, I think they're striving to find that kind of information because. It leads to a depth of who we are as community, and it really enriches all of our being, you know, whatever we are. It enriches our queerness to mm-hmm. know that happened. These days, I know that I think I first discussed gaydar to my mom when I looked at my nephew out in the driveway, and I said, Mom, you realize David's gonna be gay. He's gay, Mom. And she was like, what? I said, take a look. And I was probably 12 or 13 when we had that conversation.
Mm-hmm. So she was just clueless?
No, she wasn't clueless. No, my mom was not clueless. She got it. All I was that kind of kid that could have that conversation with their mom and say, take a look, Mom. That's there's a young man who's different than the older brother.
Right. So what do you, maybe Drew Lemish, you talk about this. I mean, what are the clues? I mean, there are certain, like some gay men sort of have what you might call effeminate. I don't know what the right thing to call it is. Some lesbians have sort of a more masculine way of presenting themselves. On the other hand, lots of straight guys could also have those characteristics, and lots of straight women could also. So, I mean, is it polite to just walk up to somebody and say, you know, are you gay, or how do you deal with that as a person?
I think most people they usually identify themselves before I, you know, make assumptions of whether or not, well, I guess I always make assumptions. But then before I would say to them or ask them, I think they would identify as that. And then a lot of people say stereotypes exist for a reason. I definitely don't think that's true, because, trying to fall into those stereotypes so you are easily identifiable. Mm-hmm. I think is what some gay men my age do, and how they identify themselves is by going with the stereotype. And
so the stereotype is almost a way of putting a flag up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it might not even really be you in a sense, but it's a way of sort of letting other people know.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Stereotypes are a terrible thing, I think. And because there's plenty of straight men that, you know, like, their voice is higher, they, mm-hmm. you know, dress nicer, which is a terrible stereotype, because, I mean, dressing nice, that's not gay or straight, it's mm-hmm. just dressing nice. And I think that's what people are like, oh, look how he dresses, he must be gay. Well, no, he probably just has a great sense of style, or his girlfriend dresses mm-hmm. him or something.
Yeah. It seems like we're at a really interesting time in history, and that people throughout the culture are starting to grapple with these things, and there's been these huge changes made in equal rights just in the last 5 years. And, you know, stuff in the media having being gay is sort of on campus is kind of cool, right? I mean, it's like, that's what the sense I get from talking to my kids who are in college. It's like, kind of like, it's hip to be gay at this point. Is that true, Drew?
I wouldn't necessarily say that it's hip to be gay. And at UA, there's a small percentage.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even have an active LGBTQA student club. And they've like tried starting one multiple times, and it comes and goes. Mm-hmm. And I think if it was hip to be gay, there would be a much larger club going on.
I guess different parts of the country probably have.
Definitely.
And we'll get into that more about the different ways people are in different parts of the country. Tell us about Safe Zone.
Yeah, so Safe Zone is a program that was started in 2010 on UA's campus. It's a national... It's a program that goes on at many universities. It might be called Safe Space or Safe Zone, or there's many names for it. But we got it from Western Oregon University, and they have modules that we take participants through that show them what it's like to be in the community. One of the most impactful program or module that we go through is Coming Out Stars, and each person gets a different color star, and then we tell a story about everybody is in coming out, and they identify as LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. And each point on the star represents something like family, community, work, your dreams. And we take them through that, and stuff happens, like maybe your family rejects you completely and you tear off that point, or maybe... it takes some time for your family, so you just fold back that point on the star, mm-hmm. and later on in the story, you fold it back up, and they're there to support you.
Mm-hmm. So part of a big part of Safe Zone is helping people come out and feel like they're supported when they're doing it.
Right, helping people come out, and then helping straight allies be supportive of supportive of the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody wants to talk, and we give the allies resources where they can point, you know, students or staff or faculty to,
mm-hmm.
in a situation where they, like if, like we have identities link on our website and other community resources and national resources that they can go to, mm-hmm. to get help if they need it.
Yeah, interesting. Drew Phoenix, tell you talked about realizing the gender that of your body was not the gender of your mind, if you will, at a very young age. How did that process of coming out and of sort of living the gender that you felt you really were, how did that happen for you?
Very, very, very slowly over the course of 4 decades.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was thinking about your question earlier. There's the internal identification, but it also can depend, especially for a trans person, upon other people's affirmations and confirmations of your identity.
Yeah.
And if that's not there, if it's not present in the form of books to read about transgender people, images of transgender people, TV shows with transgender people, you know, then it may not happen because you have nothing to bounce off of to become aware of your own identity. So, for instance, I grew up, I was born in 59, so I grew up in the 60s, and I had no one to look to.
Mm-hmm.
I had no way to make sense of what I was experiencing for myself, the disconnect between who I was told I was and who I felt myself to be. And so it took many decades because there weren't there wasn't transgender literature,
mm-hmm. Just figuring
leadership
out.
Role, mm-hmm. you know, role figures and things like that out there for me to look at.
Right, and identity is not only about, you know, disagree with me if you do, but identity is not only about what you feel inside, because you wouldn't need an identity if there weren't other people in the world, right?
Right.
It's about how you relate to others, and so how your identity is socially defined.
Right.
Yeah. So did you, I mean, was there a day when you sort of reached a feeling of fulfillment or of, you know, okay, I'm there?
There were days of awareness over those 4 decades of, like, it's sort of, I liken it to when you have a beach ball and you're in a swimming pool and you push it down under the water, it pops back up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can only keep it down so long. It was kind of like that until 7 years ago, I decided I needed to transition.
Uh-huh.
It's a process.
Yeah.
And sometimes for some of us, it takes a lifetime, but I hope that by being somebody here today, speaking and doing other things in the community, that our young people, children and teenagers won't have to wait 4 decades,
mm-hmm.
to transition, that their parents will be informed. They'll have somebody to look to and to talk with, books to read, mm-hmm. about being transgender, and they can make the transition much earlier.
And I feel like that's happening, don't you? I mean,
slowly.
I'm the same age as you, and I, you know, the change that's happened in our lifetime is extraordinary.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anne Marie, do you want to talk about your sort of coming out experience?
I haven't yet. I really haven't. I sense that maybe this show is it.
There you go. Well, you are the co-chair of identity, so.
No, but again, I was a reluctant person to join a board. Actually, mm-hmm. Phyllis Rhodes cornered me and said that I would have more fun on that board than I would on any other board. So I said yes. And I actually watched things from the sidelines for a number of years. And then I realized that I had something to offer, which was I could put a better booth space at Pride Fest into the mix of identities layout. So I would take care of the booths at Pride Fest, and that was maybe 5 years ago when I started that, and I found out that I had a few really kernels of things to give to identity, and then I found out that these people that I was on the board with, I actually liked them so much, and they respected me for who I was, and they allowed me to just bring who I was at the interval that I was comfortable with. You know, they just let me be me. And I took on more things that had to do with leadership roles. And then they shoved me into a co-chair position.
Mm-hmm.
And then they brought Drew Phoenix on, and I was like, wow, this is so cool. And it was really fun, I have to say. Identity has been very fortunate to have a B and a T as co-chair, because we're the outliers. We're not the standard, ordinary L and G. And if you've just tuned into the show, we're talking lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. Sorry. But that is something that identity is really proud of. The board is really proud of the fact that, you know, as leaders, we talk about fluidity. Drew and I are always talking about how that you call it, how do you call it, Drew? That gender fluidity that we are part of, seeing young people come up in community, it's really important for us to keep the door wide open, as wide as possible.
Yeah. And I just wanted to piggyback, if I could. I think one of our many gifts that we as LGBT people bring to the entire community is sort of this freedom from gender oppression. Because everybody, I don't care who they are, at some point has been asked to dress the way they didn't want to dress or work in a profession they didn't want to work in. Maybe not so much with the younger generation, but I know, I'm sure, our generation and before, you know, being sort of funneled into certain jobs, certain dress codes, certain gender role expectations. And so I think what we continue to bring as a community is this opportunity to really be yourself, your whole self, and not fall into those old sort of norms of roles and responsibilities and things.
And that's a great, that's a great way of moving into sort of the next topic, which is you know, Alaska is supposed to be about freedom and individuality, right? So I'm interested in what the experience of you guys who, you know, it takes obviously some courage to come out and talk about these things, how you feel about whether Alaska lives up to that reputation. And I'd be very interested in hearing from listeners as well, whether members of the LGBT community or straight folks who have questions or comments, everything's fair game. And if you call in, you'll go to our screener, Kristen, and she'll let me know what you want to talk about, and I'll bring you on the air to ask your question or make your comment. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. Email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. I'm always really interested in the coming out story because I think that's something that we can all kind of all identify with, and realizing that you have to take action and how you came to that recognition. So I shared an article with my guest today, which was in the New York Times on Sunday, and you'll find it on our website at alaskapublic.org. Just click on LGBT in Anchorage. And the article is by a social scientist who had looked at records from Google and Facebook and other online tools that we use all the time to look at, you know, and he's looking specifically at gay men, although I imagine it's probably would be replicable with other identities as well. And looking like how many people could we be pretty sure were gay as a minimum? And then looking at different states and correlating the laws in those states with how many people had come out, and then looking at some other indicators of repressed sexuality and what it means to not be able to come out. And perhaps not surprisingly, those states with the least gender equality laws had the largest number of closeted gay men. And those with the most equality had the least number of closeted gay men. And then there were some interesting, one of the more interesting things was women who had been on Google and asking about, is my husband gay? In the Deep South, the states with the most repressive laws, that question was asked on Google much more frequently. Because obviously there are gay men who are married in straight relationships where they probably don't belong. So in Anchorage, we started fighting kind of a political battle over equal rights when the city was unified in 1976-77, again in 1993 when there was an ordinance, and then again just a couple of years ago. And we never have passed an equal rights ordinance. We went from being a city that was way ahead of the curve in 77 to now, when we fail to pass an ordinance or have an initiative, it's national news that, you know, a city our size doesn't have any kind of equal rights. I'm interested in how does that, I mean, for talking to my guests, and I'd like to talk to each of you, Do you feel like Alaska lives up to its reputation for, individualism, freedom, live and let live, with respect to you and who you are?
Charles, I guess I'm going to say that Drew and I were talking about this, and I was forcing myself to come up with the most negative experience I've had in Alaska in preparation for your show. And Drew hit a nerve with me when he asked me what my experience was like with One Anchorage. And I have to say that I'm going to recount that, and I'll let others, feel what they feel. But I know that the emotion that I felt for this state that I have been residing in for 19 years was really came to a head when the group of people who were heavily involved in the One Anchorage campaign were in a room where we thought we were all toasting. We were all given champagne, but we were told to get on the phones because it wasn't time yet. Even though we had the numbers, the marketing had been done, the research had been done, we had been told that it was going to be a skinny margin, but we were going to win.
You thought you were going to win.
We were going to win.
And the equal rights would be passed.
Yes, yeah. And we were in front of computer screens because they said, they were the leaders, they were mm-hmm. who knew best, and they said, get in front of the computer screens and just get people out to vote. And that's when I got a phone call from my daughter on the cell phone, and she said, mm-hmm. Mom, she was at Central Middle School, and she said, it has been wacky. There is something mm-hmm. really odd. And then there were all of a sudden things happening that were breaking in the room that we were all in. And the current of energy that goes through your body when you're in the midst of something like the ground just opening up below you is how that felt. There mm-hmm. was something amiss. There was something mm-hmm. very, very wrong that was going on. And we were, again, looking to those leaders who said, hold on, and let's wait and let's see. And it got stranger and stranger. And that feeling, that just, it's like somebody punched me in the gut because I was with my daughter. I mean, we had worked through that campaign together. It was going to be something that we were going to watch historically change in this state, mm-hmm. in our town. And it had been manipulated from us. And that is the worst experience I've had.
Just the vote itself,
yes.
and the experience itself,
yes.
of that election,
yes.
night. Yeah. All right. I hear you. I guess I was thinking more in terms of your day-to-day experience rather than that political moment. But I hear you that that's obviously a really emotional moment for you.
Yeah, and, it was. Yeah.
Drew Phoenix, do you want to weigh in on that how you feel about Anchorage as a community in terms of whether it's accepting of you as a person?
Well, it's been a mix, both around the One Anchorage campaign and then just in general. The One Anchorage campaign, I don't know if you remember, but there were caricatures of transgender people mm-hmm. run in ads, 2 weeks before the vote, something like that, mm-hmm. really shortly before. Which was a huge insult and affront to me as a transgender person. They were completely caricatures. And I actually reluctantly said I would do an ad, and I did, on behalf of the transgender community mm-hmm. To speak out against it. Generally, I haven't had that kind of experience, although when I first moved here, I was denied a rental mm-hmm. because of who I am. Everything was fine. They checked my background, checked my credit. And everything seemed to be fine until they saw that, because when you check credit history, you see every person you've ever been and every name you've ever been. And they saw a female name in my credit history.
I see.
And said, who's this person, this female name on your record? And I said, that's me. I'm transgender. And then the rental agreement was dropped and I didn't get the place. Mm-hmm. So I've had those kinds of things happen.
And that just must feel horrible.
It feels horrible. To be denied something simply because of who I am.
Yeah.
When I have good credit history, I pay taxes, I have a full-time job, a really good one, and for no other reason than either for my gender identity or my sexual orientation, I'm denied something. And it's as a transgender person, or I would think for a gay or lesbian person or bisexual person who's very stereotypically say you're male and you're stereotypically female, feminine, in mm-hmm. your expression, how you dress, you know, it's tough dealing with public accommodations, mm-hmm. going into the locker room, using a bathroom in a restaurant.
Right.
You know, so every time I go into a men's restroom still, even though I think I look pretty male, every time I go into a men's restroom or to the locker room or someplace, I have a moment of, I wonder if I'll be found out and be harassed or worse, beaten. And it happens to people.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened to me, but it happens to many people.
Yeah. I mean, it's still, there's still courage, quite a lot of courage involved in coming out and being who you are. And I guess that's what we're talking about today. I want to have you answer the same question, Jude Lemish, but we have to take a break, and we have a couple of calls that we're going to take up as soon as we get back from that break. So what I'm going to do is we'll take the break, and I'll give the phone number when we come out for other callers. We'll have Drew answer the question that I just brought up a moment ago, and then we'll continue with our discussion on Hometown Alaska. Please stay with us.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and today we're talking about the LGBT experience in Anchorage, prejudice, difficulties that people with different sexual identities face, and just what's our town like for people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. And we are welcoming your calls and comments. We've got a couple lined up, but we have time for many more. We've got a half hour left. The phone number here is 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, the number is 888-353-5752. And email is a great way to get on the show, especially if you're at work or something and you can't call. It's hometown@alaskapublic.org. My name is Charles Wolforth, and I have three guests with me. Anne-Marie Moylan is co-chair of Identity. Drew Phoenix is the other co-chair. And Drew Lemish is a UAA student, a Safe Zone student worker, and also the president of the student government at UAA. And Drew, I wanted to give you an opportunity to answer the same question I asked before about does Alaska sort of live up to its reputation for support, respecting the individual? And I guess it's really a question about what prejudice you face.
Yeah. Well, coming from Georgia, I think Alaska is a lot more open than North Georgia, where I'm originally from. But in Anchorage, there's still every day, like, there's things I face. Like, when I go out with my boyfriend, if we go to a bar or we go shopping or something, like, we're not as comfortable as with, like, holding hands as a straight couple would be. Mm-hmm. And we're, like, always worried about that. Like, what if somebody finds out? Like, are they going to harass us? Or, you know, what are safe places to go, like, on a date if we go out to eat? Mm-hmm. Is there places in Anchorage that we shouldn't go? And are we going to be harassed, like, if people find out?
And have you had those experiences where you get harassed or negative sort of attitudes?
I think we get looks. And so we just try not to, like, we won't hold hands in public or I think, luckily for both of us, I think we don't have a lot of, like, struggles that a lot of other gay men face, like, the stereotypes that I was talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily fall into those, so we can look like two guys shopping together. And, like, we often get asked, like, oh, are you shopping for your girlfriends? Especially, like, around the holidays. Well, no, we're not shopping, you know? But it's easy to answer the question with just a simple no and not, you know, go into detail. So just look, sometimes we get, if, like, we do hold hands, like, walking down Fourth Avenue, we've got looks before, and mm-hmm. we just, you know, let go of hands and then just walk, and it's totally fine.
I mean, does it feel like you just would, I mean, I would think you would feel like, I just want to do what I am doing and to heck with everybody else. But you're kind of constrained in that because of this sort of negativity that's directed to you, even though it's not physically violent or overt.
Right. And then, like, another thing is we, like, if getting a place together, like we've talked about, you know, renting. And if we rent, you're not comfortable, like, renting a one-bedroom because we're afraid of what, you know, being rejected or...
Right, because discrimination is still legal here.
Right. Yeah. So we'd have to rent a two-bedroom or something else.
Mm-hmm. So let's go to our callers. Mike is calling from Anchorage. Mike?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm a gay male. I didn't come out until my mid-20s, late-20s, actually. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, growing up here, going through Anchorage School District. You know, I experienced a lot of harassment. I was beaten up quite a bit, called names I'm not going to say on the radio. And that stuck with me for a long time. You know, and I was in high school when they passed the constitutional amendment discriminating against gay and lesbian people, stopping you from marrying the person that you love. And that felt like a validation for every person that had ever pushed me down, spit on me, called me a you-know-what. And it felt like the state of Alaska was blessing their activities, was saying, you know what, he's not as good as the rest of you, and it's okay for you to do that because he's not as human as you. And that's how I felt. And it was really tough. I fought with suicidal tendencies. I have had friends kill themselves. And it's painful to see your state essentially blessing that kind of behavior by separating you, segregating you into a lesser class of citizen just because of your self-identity. And after high school, though, it suddenly switched. I have not been discriminated against publicly, and I would probably start a fight with someone if they walked up to me and tried to do any of the stuff that used to happen to me every day at school nowadays. And I think that there's been a sea change in the tide of opinion. I think that particularly in my age group, the millennials, who are from teens to early 30s, you know, that age group just doesn't care. It's like the only people that really seem to have a problem with how other people self-identify are the baby boomers and the older, kind of more set in their way folks who unfortunately are still running our state. So you know, when I saw that amendment pass, the constitutional amendment pass, you know, it had the same punch in the gut kind of feeling that Anne Marie described, and watching the very likely vote manipulation which occurred with the voting machines that were taken home by church members during the One Anchorage campaign and the vote that followed.
Right.
I was in the assembly meeting when...
Yeah, and I don't want to... I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mike, but I think you already raised a really good point, and rather than get too much into that political issue that we could spend the whole hour on, I just wanted to ask our panelists here if they feel like there's been a sea change.
Yes.
Yeah, you do, Anne-Marie?
Yes. I'm really excited to talk about that positive sea change. Mm-hmm. But I first want to say thank you so much, Mike, for calling in. That's wonderful. I really am excited by what is happening in our community right now. And I will take the smallest little bit of positive and build accolades around it, because that's how we move this forward. I'm not going to say that, you know, tomorrow it's all changing. But tremendous things are happening, and they're coming from allies. They're coming from people who witnessed the One Anchorage debacle and decided that they want to continue this, and they wanted to find out what is happening. And they've moved things forward, and I'd love for Drew to talk a little bit more about it.
All right. Drew Phoenix, do you want to? I mean, and I'm interested in, like, also just the issue of how you perceive change to have taken place. Either both of you, yeah.
I think the biggest sea change is coming from allies in general, but the business community in particular.
Mm-hmm. There was that Chamber of Commerce presentation that I think was broadcast here on our airwaves, where a member of the gay Chamber of Commerce presented here in Anchorage about just the economic factor. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Business community recognizes that we're an economic powerhouse as the LGBT community, mm-hmm. both in terms of quality, qualified employees that we want to draw to Alaska, and also in our buying power. I'm sure the listeners have heard about Live, Work, Play. If not, you mm-hmm. will soon. And one part of that
from the
is
Anchorage
called,
Economic Development Corporation.
Yeah, one part mm-hmm. of that is called One Anchorage, One Economy, which, you know, we want to attract qualified LGBT people to our state to work. We have a great need for that. And we also want families, LGBT families, to move here and to take advantage of all the wonderful things that we have here in Anchorage. And that's the goal of Live, Work, Play, is to make this the number one city mm-hmm. by 2025. Mm-hmm. And so business is on board. And I see that change. That's going to be the biggest factor mm-hmm. in creating change here.
Yeah. Drew Lemus, you're sort of from a younger generation than the rest of us. And I wonder if you see, as Mike was saying, that older Alaskans are more prejudiced than people members of your generation. Is that something that you experience in your everyday life?
Definitely. And so my grandma, she's definitely from a different generation mm-hmm. from I am, and she grew up in Memphis, Tennessee. And coming out to her was the hardest person to come out to, and just assuring her that it's 2013 and not 1960. In Memphis, Tennessee, they're not the same at all, but she still has those perceived ideas of what it is to be gay and what happens to gay people, and so just reaffirming that. And then she was up here in November, and it was way different, and her idea changed, and we talked about what it was like when she was young, and she had a gay brother growing up and what it was like for him, and how it's different for me, and that we're in a generation now where, my peers are accepting, and just it's definitely changing, and mm-hmm. we're in 2013 and not 1960 anymore.
I had an experience with a friend who was gay my age and was estranged from his parents, who were Southern Baptists, and had raised him in a household that was extremely hostile to homosexuality. And he, when he got ill, and he wouldn't let his parents come to the hospital, and I talked to his parents, and they sort of said, let him know we realized we were wrong, let him know we've changed. And there was a lot of forgiveness that had to happen for him to let them come back into his life. And I realized that there's an emotional journey here that has to happen on both sides, that those who have been subject to prejudice, in order for freedom to happen on all sides, have to essentially forgive those who've sort of seen the light and moved on. Have you had any of those experiences, Drew Phoenix or Anne-Marie Moylan?
Forgiving others, I think we're steeped in it right now as we all witness the fact that Nelson Mandela just passed. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's
the example, isn't it?
It is. It's the total example of and the fact that I find myself living during the time when Nelson Mandela lived, it was a gift that mm-hmm. I actually experienced both the tragedy of what happened in South Africa, and yet the other side of it, this incredible, enormous gift of Nelson being freed. And I think that has similar perspective to their community, to the LGBT community. Mm-hmm. And we do have to forgive often.
Be ready for change to happen. Yeah. All right. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. That was Anne-Marie Moylan, who's co-chair of Identity here in Anchorage. Drew Phoenix is the other co-chair. And Drew Lemish is a UA student and involved in Safe Zone on campus, and also is the student body president. If you'd like to get on the air with us, we've got about a quarter of an hour left. The number here is 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. And the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And now I'd like to go to Edith, who's calling from Anchorage. Edith?
Hi, good afternoon. Just for the record, I'm straight.
All right.
But first, I would like to do a little praising. We are all familiar, especially this time of year, how hard it is to get services on any of our stores with the downsizing and everything that's going on. But having said all that, about a week or more ago, I was so pleased to receive service with a smile, I should say, from a clerk, a gay clerk at Tidal Wave. He was in drag, and I was taken by surprise, but I was, you know, I didn't care. All I wanted was service. So I want to thank Tidal Wave for taking that step, and also for that young man that that was so helpful when I needed it. Having said that, I have worked in the state of Alaska for 20 years now, and my experiences have not always been great. I had the great pleasure of working with a care coordinator some years back, professional, impeccable on her manner of working, who happened to be a lesbian. All the coworkers knew her, and we accepted her, respected each other, as we all should. However, the manager of the place, one day, in my presence, suggested to her that she should dress more like a woman. All my respect goes to this person. It's been so many years ago, if she's out there listening. She resigned the very next day, and I resigned shortly after, on principle. So my question is, as far as the Human Rights Commission, if we would have gone with this, say, to make a complaint, to have a case heard, would we've had a chance that this would be seen as abuse toward the employers, or is the at-will policies really fostering this type of behavior on our employers? And last,
you know, I think let's take one question at a time, Edith. I think none of us here is an attorney, as far as I know. I think that's the ordinance didn't pass, and so it is legal to discriminate in Anchorage. That's how I understand it. So the answer would be no. You would. I don't think you would be able to bring a complaint, Drew Phoenix.
Although I would add, even though it wouldn't make a difference in terms of our legal protections right now, Edith, I think it's, first of all, thank you for sharing this. And it's important to go ahead and tell the Equal Rights Commission so it goes on record, even though it may not change the law. So if anybody does witness any kind of discrimination against an LGBT person, it is important to go ahead and put it on record.
Mm-hmm. All right. And did you have one more quick one, Edith?
No, I just want to leave our audience with an idea. And I'm sorry, you know, English is my second language, and I get a little nervous.
You're doing great.
If you were drowning out here in one of those cold, frozen lakes, would you care if that hand that reached out to you was gay or straight? I hope your answer is no. And I think that's the same principles you should apply to people that you are here working with and the people that you have here in the community.
Okay, good. Thanks, Edith. So if other callers, we have a few minutes left. The number is 550-8433. I have another question for our panelists here. And obviously, the reason I was invited you was that you're leaders. You've already put your names out there on the websites and said that you're leading these organizations. And you're leading, you know, something called the LGBTQ. I also heard another letter added. I didn't know what that was. Community, which in a way is it's a community within the broader community. Does that, and yet the goal is really for there be one Anchorage and everyone together, and mm-hmm. for these allies we're talking about, which presumably are straight individuals or folks who don't identify themselves as part of that community. Do you see that in a perfect world there would be no LGBT community, or is that there wouldn't be any wall there, or is that a necessity here? And how do the allies sort of get involved? Are we welcome as being part of the community too?
Oh, you bet.
So how does that?
Most definitely.
Let's talk about that. About how, just to talk generally about the straight, the LGBT, so many letters.
You know, I will,
how does that work together?
I will start by saying I am so excited for this time right now. I encourage anybody who's out there listening, who's on the fence or thinking, wow, this is something that I think I would believe in. There is a place for everyone to become involved. And this is still, even though One Anchorage, you know, didn't go forward, what we got from it, there is a fervor, there is an excitement, there is something building here in Anchorage. And not to be part, not to jump on the bus now is the wrong move. Jump on the bus from anywhere, from any side angle. I encourage you to jump on the bus because you will be part of history changing.
Well, the Supreme Court decision was history, and there was a wonderful article in the New Yorker, if you didn't see it, about profiling the woman who brought that case and what it was like to be her and go through that experience. So, Drew Phoenix, tell me about your, we've talked a little bit about prejudice and how it feels to you. On the other hand, there's a lot of positive out there, right? I mean, do you get positive feedback from, like, there's no straight community, but from the sort of the general community for who you are and the changes that we're seeing?
Yeah, I've received a lot of positive feedback about that and affirmation and so forth. And also just wanted to stress that, along with Anne-Marie's comments, that we're part of a larger equality movement. And I think we always keep clear about that, that we're one group that is being discriminated against, but there are all kinds of forms of discrimination based on race and ethnicity here in Anchorage, and that we're see ourselves as part of a larger movement for equality and not siloed in this one little thing as LGBT. You know, we're whole people who live in this community that's very diverse in many, many ways, and we bring our whole selves to our work. And so we're about everybody's equality here in Alaska.
Do you see this idea of a community or of this organization identity being something that would go on into the future, even in this imaginary future where prejudice didn't exist? Would it still need to be a community of people who identified differently? Any of you?
No, I don't think it will be here. I hope for a day when it doesn't have to be here, but that's a long way down the road.
Drew Lemish, in terms of your work at UAA, obviously you're trying to help young people feel more comfortable about coming out. What's the role of allies or you know, the straight, the non-gay people in helping that take place?
Just being there and supporting people who are, maybe like their family rejects them and they're at the university, which if you come out and your family rejects you, like living in the residence halls is the best place you can be because there's such a community there. So being that person that, you know, reassures them that, you know, maybe it'll take time for their family or, there's other, you can, you know, create your own family too, and just reassuring them that it's going to be okay and giving them the resources they need to get along and be comfortable with who they are, and maybe, you know, setting them up with people that will help them on this journey or coming out. Or
what do you think is you talked about the hard time you had talking to your grandmother when you came out. And we've talked about people, you know, prejudice that you're subjected to. And I suppose highlighting those things probably makes it scarier for people to come out. What do you think is the scariest thing about coming out? And what I mean, it seems to me it does take courage. What are the biggest barriers?
I come from like an accepting family, but it was still, I was worried. Like I was, you know, 99.9% sure that they were going to be okay with it. But there was still that like 0.1% that was just terrifying. So family and, you know, friends, work, luckily, like I've worked at the university and they have the discrimination policy in place that you can't discriminate based on sexual orientation. So if I worked somewhere else, I would, you know, be afraid that they were going to find out and, you know, fire me or do that. Harass me and make me want to quit or something.
All right, we have a caller from Wasilla. Sra, I think is how you pronounce your name. Wasilla?
Hi.
Hi. Did you have a question or comment?
I did. I was wondering as we were wrapping up the show if Drew and Annie could give us the best example of what an ally could do to support the eradication of discrimination in Anchorage.
Yeah, good one. And Drew Lemish already addressed that. Drew Phoenix?
Thanks for calling in, Sarah. Appreciate it. I think the first thing I think of is allies who are parents of children in school. There's a lot, the school's making great headway, but I think there's a lot more we could do. As a transgender person, parents, being supportive of other parents with transgender kids, working in your parents' associations, PTAs, in bringing more education about LGBT issues, safety issues into the school, into the curriculum. So I would, you know, those of you who are parents, see what you can do in the local school system to help improve things for young people, because early on we begin to know who we are, whether it's gender identity or sexual orientation. And those kids need to know they're safe, and they need to know they have resources and supports, and that it's very clear what those are and how they get them.
Yeah.
I just want to add that Wasilla has a fantastic GSA, and Sarah
GSA?
Yes, a Gay Straight Alliance in their high school. They have brought lots of their kids to Pride Prom for several years in a row. And I think, again, because I'm a mom, and I know you're a mom, Sarah, so I can tell you that it's really about recognizing that you're a mom in front of a bunch of other moms. And I think that's a really important role, that when you're in front of those kids and you get to show the kind of mom you are to the other ones, to that community of children, I think that's tremendous, because then they will count on you. They will knock on your door or call on you and say, you know, I'm having an issue. Can I talk to you? Because I've seen the kind of mom you are. So that's what I would say you as a mom ally could do, Sarah.
I want to, we're just about out of time. But it seems to me that, you know, that the fight for sort of legal equality in Anchorage has in many ways been so negative. But this stuff you're talking about, Anne-Marie, and all of you, about coming out and just being who you are and what the impact that has on the community is really very positive. Do you want to see another ordinance fight? I mean, or do we just keep going with what we're doing? And we just have a minute left. Anne-Marie, do you want to take that one? What's the next step?
I want to see equality in Anchorage. I want to see it spread across the state like a wildfire. Not a bad wildfire, but a really positive wildfire.
So, and it's all about maybe just being you until it's ready to happen. What do you think?
Being us as individuals and being out, that's the greatest gift we can give. Yeah. But also being parts of groups like Identity, Safe Zone, and others that are working in a larger way to bring about change. Both things are important. It's going to come through grassroots change.
Right. Thank you to all of you. That was Drew Phoenix, co-chair of Identity. You also heard from Anne-Marie Moylan, also co-chair of Identity. And earlier, Drew Lemish, who is a UAA student, Safe Zone student worker, and president of the student government. Next week on Hometown Alaska, I'll be back to host our annual program, recognizing the volunteers in our community. If you'd like to say thank you to a group of volunteers or an individual who has generously donated their time, make sure to call in next week or send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. It's basically a shout-out show, your opportunity here in the holidays to let people know you appreciate them. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media. Kristen Platt is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.